passionate instigator, and dynamic problem solver, Dr. Kevin Ross Emery, the host of the Dr. Kevin Radio Show, will be taking you outside the box, behind the curtain, and identifying the load of BS we are fed every day. And now, Dr. Kevin.
Hello, and welcome to where we challenge everything on. Yes. So we want to welcome you there this week. We know the last couple of weeks we've been doing some technical difficulties, and we hope that we have those all straightened out. Computers and internet, you can't live with it, and you can't live without it. But hopefully we're going to be living very well with it this week. So as always, I'm going to start with my hot topic for the week. And my hot topic this week is, why does humanity have such a need to be nasty? I mean, you know, we're coming up on the presidential elections. They're only about 6 or 7 weeks away. The debates are starting. And people can't simply say, I don't think Donald Trump is my candidate. I don't think Hillary is my candidate. I don't think Gary Johnson is my candidate. No. It has to be nastatory. It has to be full of profanity. Amazes me the amount of unsize. Oh, they get energy on social media. You find them. You find them on Facebook. You find them on LinkedIn. You find them all over the place, and they're there. And it gets out there, and it's like, oh, well, then it must be true. You know, I mean, was that, you know, Donald Trump was from alien parents, and, you know, Hillary Clinton, Liz love child was Putin or something. I mean, and people go, see, that's why I'm not voting for him or her. She's, you know, the Tsar of Russia's mother. I mean, I'm like, really? Why do we have to be so nasty? Why can't we simply say, I support this person for this reason, or I support that person for that reason? I don't know. The ugliest side of humanity seems to come out during presidential election seasons. I'm now going to bring in today's guest, and I will be introducing him more deeply after we kick around this conversation. But we have returning, because he got kicked out because of technical difficulties on our old platform, Fernando Rojo. Fernando, are you there? Hello? Fernando? Fernando, are you there? Are we having technical difficulties? Fernando? Well, I'm not sure where Fernando is, and I'm not sure what's going on, but I'm going to take him. Fernando is a 20-year-old student at UPenn in Philadelphia. During his freshman year, he founded Pato's Shoes, a social impact shoe brand that sells handcrafted sneakers made with authentic indigenous... I'm not hearing him at all.
Yep, I can hear you. Just crackled in and out a little bit, but I think we're all good now.
Good.
I'm hearing a tiny little bit of interference.
Okay, good. So, Fernando, tell me.
Yep.
So what do you think? Why does humanity have to be... I can hear you fine.
Great. Yeah, I think it's just a delay.
Why do you think that humanity has to be so nasty? Why can't we just state an opinion without having to... Okay.
Yeah.
So, Fernando, why do you think that humanity has to be so nasty?
Well, you know, in the context that you're just... Yeah, can you hear me? Yep.
Hello?
Yeah, can you hear me? I'm not sure if it's just you, if I'm cracking in and out. Hello?
I'm hearing you fine.
Okay, yeah, I can hear you then. Well, look, it's a pretty interesting question. I mean, above all, you know, in the context that you mentioned it for presidential elections, something that generally, you know, impacts people's lives a lot, and of course it arouses a lot of passion. The way that I see it is a little bit of a top-down issue. I mean, if the people leading the entire election, you know, often find themselves speaking about the general public in really angry ways, then that's going to aid, you know, that's just going to kind of trickle down into the way that people talk in general. I mean, when you have someone who, you know, a candidate who might at times say protesters should get kicked out of rallies in pretty bad ways or demonize big groups of people, then yeah, I think that can be a pretty negative thing for the general political discourse.
So, do you have any ideas? I mean, I think that one of the reasons why people are so nasty, and they seem to be nastier than they have been in past elections, is I think that people are very discouraged and very afraid, and they're feeling very disempowered in a lot of ways. And so, therefore, I think that they're scared. They're scared. I think that they feel like they might be losing the American dream. I think that they may be feeling like they don't have, you know, that they're not going to make it. People are losing houses and having a hard time feeding their families. And I think that that fear is playing out in how people are dealing with this election. Thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, you know, those fears definitely are pretty widespread. I mean, in general, what you see is that you know, there's a lot more clustering in terms of political ideology today of where people are living than in the past. So, you know, you see red areas and blue areas be much less diverse. And, you know, that ends up making people, you know, become much more extreme in their views. The combination of that with, you know, a much more politically driven media that, you know, comes as a result of the more political a you know, outlet is, generally the more revenue they generate. So a combination of factors like that has, you know, have sort of led to this position where everyone is generally much more extreme than in the past. I mean, you know, there's a lot of scientific representation for it that just sort of shows that, you know, there used to be people who were Republicans who were more liberal than Democrats. There used to be Democrats who were more conservative than some Republicans. And it's just sort of a non-existent thing at this point. So, you know, I think that that's definitely a big factor.
So now I'm going to pick on you as a representation of the 20th of the 20 something generation. And we're going to get sure. into something because you are definitely fall into that impressive category of a 20 something. Are the 20 somethings buying into this? Are they getting sucked into this, do you think? Are you seeing as much polarization at UPenn and with your peers as we're seeing in the general public?
And, you know, that's a very interesting question. I mean, I'll say a couple things. I, of course, can't compare people my age to previous generations of people that have, you know, been in their 20s. But what I can say is that we – you know, for better or worse, I would like to say for better, have a very active, you know, political generation. And whether it's as polarized, you know, in a way, yes, because, you know, a lot of people are getting so much content day in and day out from news sources that, you know, they see on Facebook, and the algorithm that they're receiving their news from gives them stuff that they already believe. And so we are inherently – you know, presented with information that could be totally false or that just confirms what we already believe. What I will say is that the way that young people are polarized is different on you know, it's on different issues than those of older generations. I found that people that are younger, at least in my demographic, are far, you know, farther left on most social issues. And I don't think that's actually any sort of big claim, but that seems to be the way that it is. The negative side of that is that, you know, you mentioned what's experienced like at UPenn, and I found that, you know, people on the right tend to have more trouble voicing their views because, you know, they do get shot down a lot by the left. So it's an interesting situation.
Okay. Well, and, you know, I don't remember. I was pretty intensely involved in the world in my own way, but I have to say,
sure,
I don't remember my generation in the early 20-somethings being quite as vitriolic around politics. We had our issues about stuff that we didn't think that was fair, and we would speak out, but, you know, we were more like party hardy and leave your fellow brother alone if he's not bothering you than I seem to see today. So anyways, that being said, what I am going to do now is I'm going to do a full introduction of you. That will lead us to break. And then when you come back, we're going to put you on the hot seat. Fernando is, he's like, you haven't already. Fernando is a 20-year-old student at UPenn in Philadelphia. During his freshman year, he founded Patos Shoes, a social impact shoe brand that sells handcrafted sneakers made with authentic indigenous textiles from Latin America. Without receiving any venture capital funding, Patos was featured in CNBC, named as one of 2016's coolest college startups. Oh, baby, coolest. You're on the coolest. Oh, my. By Inc. Magazine, and has sold shoes in stores and online across the U.S. You can reach him by email at fernando@wearpatos.com, or on Twitter at Fernando the Rojo. And that's the sound of our music, and we'll be right back with Fernando.
Conscious Media for Conscious Minds. Om Times. Have you ever wondered how to change your love paradigm? The secret key is finding a love partnership, not just a regular connection. How do you find these? Through conscious relationships. Ascending Hearts Dating is a dating site for people like you that believes in second chances and a different type of spiritual connection. Try Ascending Hearts for free today at ascendinghearts.com and change your love paradigm. Ascending Hearts, the premier dating community for the spiritually awake.
Looking for inspiration?
Want to be inspired?
Not sure where to go?
Find Mark and Kim every Wednesdays at 3 p.m. Eastern on Inspired Living.
Topics will elevate consciousness and range from metaphysics to the human and social experience and all things spiritual.
Welcome to an inspired community that offers support, encouragement, and new ways of thinking. You are the inspired and the inspiration.
There is no death, only a change of worlds. Chief Seattle. Deborah Livingston is an award-winning intuitive psychic medium whose international services include mediumship, spiritual assessment, animal communication, and spiritual mentoring. She is a published author and a trained shaman. Deborah provides evidential messages from spirit and departed loved ones. Learn more at deblivmedium.com. That's D-E-B-L-I-V medium.com.
Hi, I'm Jimmy Buffett. How would you like to meet an endangered manatee? You can by joining Save the Manatee Club's Adopt the Manatee program. You can't take them home, but you can get to know your new manatee friend through the photo, biography, and information the club sends to you. And you can read updates on your manatee in the club newsletter. More importantly, your contribution goes to programs that are working to save manatees from extinction. It's easy to help. Call 1-800-432-JOIN.
We'll be right back.
Hello, 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 and welcome back to the Dr. Kevin Show, where we challenge everything and everyone. And tonight we have somebody who has been one of the, what was it, the coolest new college startup companies? Are you that cool, Fernando?
Yeah, I'm a junior at UPenn.
I didn't say I said, are you that cool? You know.
Oh, I thought you said, are you really in school? Is my that cool? No, I don't want to say so, but maybe.
Come on now, no modesty. So again, he is the founder of Pato Shoes. I just want to let you know that pair that you sent me. That's right, you didn't send me the pair, did you? I was going to say they were absolutely fabulous, but I don't think that they arrived. I don't know.
That's funny.
Oh well. You must have known I was going to give you a hard time about that, right? Somewhere in the back of your mind.
I can give you the quick explanation when we get more into it.
Oh, okay. So anyways, you were on the show once before, and just like this show started, we were having some really bad technical difficulties. And so those technical difficulties, we are going to say are over. We're having you back on. But I'd like you to take us outside the box still in this show about entrepreneurism, 20-year-olds, and I want to hear a little bit about your Kickstarter campaign. 1, 2, 3, go. Take us outside the box.
All right. So, you already mentioned Platos and who I am. And we now have essentially launched the business for the first time on Kickstarter. I'm working with two other Penn students now who are working for me, who are doing a fantastic job. And basically our goal is to raise enough money on Kickstarter through shoe pre-orders to be able to hire 15 local artisans in Peru. If we reach that goal, that means that we'll be able to give them full-time work. And it's not actually donation-based. People are going on there and buying shoes before they're actually made. $45,000 is the minimum amount of money we need, and we have about 3 weeks left to get there. The big kicker is if we get anything less than 100% of our funding goal, everyone gets their money back. We get nothing, and none of the shoes get made. So it's completely all or nothing.
Ugh, that's a tough roll of the dice. So tell me, first of all, so how are you doing on it?
So in our first 4 hours, our goal is $45,000 in 30 days. In our first 4 hours, we reached $10,000. We're currently at $26,000, which is a little bit over $23,000. Getting a little ahead of myself. We're a little bit over halfway toward our goal, and it's been 25% of the time. So we're going at twice the speed right now that we need to be. And we're hoping, we're able to maintain momentum.
So the first thing I want you to do is I want you to make sure that you go on to my Dr. Kevin, the Facebook, where this radio show is. And this is now a call-in show. This is a live call-in show, people, so you guys can call in and talk to Fernando, talk to me, find out more information. But I want you to make sure that you go on to facebook.com/mydrkevin and put the link to your Kickstarter campaign, because I grabbed all your information from what I had it before, so I didn't have that link. But I want that link to be on there, because this show will be ready for us to put out into the world. I mean, it's live today, but I think by tomorrow or the next day, I will have it in a pod format. And I will be able to actually put it through the internet, and I want to make sure that I attach that link. And I want to make sure that my listeners can go to my Dr. Kevin and click on the link.
Awesome. So yeah, I'll throw it on right away.
So that's good. So now what happens? Now, some people are going to say, and my job is sometimes to play my listener, and sometimes I'm going to play my mean listener. So Why would people donate money to give jobs to people in Peru when there are so many people here that are struggling for jobs? What is your response to that?
Yeah, that's a really good question. You know, what I can say is that, you know, I grew up here in the United States, and of course I have a lot of admiration for all business here in the United States, and my family is, you know, from Argentina. So what we're doing here is kind of, you know, allowing me to sort of go back to my culture and involve them both here in the United States and in Peru. We're taking products from there and bringing them here. That's kind of, in a way, bringing together both economies. So while the manufacturing jobs, you know, the individual artisans that are you know, are coming from the United States, any really competitors that we're working with or that we're, you know, that are in our space are manufacturing their products in China, in very unsafe areas. So what we chose to do is make it safer and introduce styles to the United States that can't be found anywhere else outside of Peru. So the reason we made them there is because that's where we're getting the styles from, and the way for us to really stay true to the culture that we're getting them from is to keep everything local. You know, if we decide to, you know, get styles from the United States, for example, something that's like culturally relevant to here, then the decision would be to make them here. But it's a way to really respect where the styles themselves are coming from.
Okay. And I'm going to actually add to that a little bit, is because there was something that you said, and because I hear comments like this sometimes, and, you know, I was raised Unitarian Universalist, and we're this, like, very social justice type of religion where when you benefit anywhere in the world, you benefit the whole world. So I think what you're doing is great. But again, I want to ask the questions that somebody might be thinking that's not calling up to ask it. And, you know, one of the things here is also, you said that you've already hired a couple of students at UPenn to help you, right?
Yeah, they're doing a really good job.
Yeah, they're doing a really good job. And they're putting money into entrepreneurialism in this country. And Patos makes lots of money. It's paying taxes in this country. And Patos expanding and growing is going to create money flow within this country that's going to benefit this country. And sometimes people don't see that larger picture. I mean, I'm all about when we can manufacture things in the States that, yes, there we should do that. But I'm not an isolationist. And so I want to point out to people that there's lots of dollars that are going to be created as this moves forward as well. By Patos being successful here. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah, that's a really good way of putting it. You know, I mean, the fact is I'm running this completely, you know, in the United States. We have people working over, you know, 10 people at a time working out in the United States. It's definitely about global inclusion, and, you know, that's the way that we see it.
So now I want to know, Kickstarter. What happens if you reach your goal? What happens if you double your goal? Could you raise $90,000 on Kickstarter?
Yeah, of course. So as I mentioned, in order to be successful or deliver a single pair of shoes on Kickstarter, we need to hit 100%. Once we hit 100%, we're really able to get to any point that, you know, that we'd like. So there is no limit to the amount that you're able to raise in sales on Kickstarter. So I guess in an even more ideal world, you know, we completely blow past our goal and have even more people who are able to enjoy our product.
So so my question is, I say, hey, I really love this idea. I'm going to go on Kickstarter. I'm going to, you know, pre-buy a pair of shoes. But I go on and I say, hey, you know, they've already raised 50. They only asked for 45. So, you know, I don't need to bother. What would you do with an extra 45,000, let's say? What would happen if you doubled your goal? Where would that extra money go?
It's a good question. So the money is really going, honestly, directly towards manufacturing the shoes. And there are a lot of upfront costs that we need, such as You know, being able to create enough raw materials at a at an efficient cost, and having, you know, the upfront money to hire people. So every time that someone buys a pair of shoes, that is extra time that we're going to be able to hire individual artisans for. So for $45,000, that's the number of, that's the amount of money we need to give full-time work to 15 artisans. Now, let's say we get double that, we might need to be able to hire a couple more. There's a direct correlation to the amount that we're selling with the amount of people that we're hiring. The reason is, compared to most shoe companies, we're not using huge machinery and like a factory that's just like a big assembly line. Like, everything is done by hand. So the people working behind it are very important, and you know, that's the money goes directly to making the shoes and investing in a couple of like new technology to make everything more efficient.
Okay. So you would take on, you'd be able to produce more shoes, you'd be able to get more jobs. Would that also mean you'd be able to do more expansion within your U.S. teams as well, or would that mostly be?
Yeah, so actually, the more our sales increase, our demand increases, then we'll be able to, both incentivize new team members and just, you know, like reapproach our growth strategy. So like right now we're basing, the size of our team and what our plans will be based on the growth strategy of what we expect from Kickstarter. Now, if we get a lot more, we'll get to reevaluate that and see what our role as a company in the United States will be.
Okay. I know we're going to be going to break in just a minute. I do want to remind people now that we are a live call-in show. And so you can call in at 1-202-570-7057. That's 1-202-570-7057, and we'll be right back.
The Real Conscious Connection. OM Times Radio. IOM FM. The number one reason girls drop out of school in sub-Saharan Africa is lack of access to feminine hygiene products. The Pads for Schoolgirls Project, an outreach of Humanity Healing International, is changing this paradigm by setting up sewing programs at schools, teaching girls a vocational skill, while producing the reusable pads that help keep them attending classes. The girls pay it forward by making and giving pad kits to other girls in need. To learn more, visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is.
Have you been searching for a perspective beyond the mainstream? Check it out. Join your hosts, Yelito Pascual and Diana Gold Holland, on Share International Radio for thought-provoking views behind the news, Sundays at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern, on OM Times Radio. You can also find us at shareontheairradio.org. This may be the message of hope you've been waiting for.
Hi, this is Bill Maher. I can find humor in almost anything, but one thing I never laugh about is cruelty to animals. If you don't get the joke either, write People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, 501 Front Street, Norfolk, Virginia, 23510.
Hello, 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 and welcome back to the Dr. Kevin Show, where we challenge everything and everyone. Today we have on with us for Fernando Rojo, the founder of Pato Shoes. He has been called by Inc. magazine one of the coolest new college startup companies, and he is in the process of a Kickstarter campaign that's going to allow him to hire more artisans, make more handcrafted shoes, and support more economy both here and in Peru. If you come to facebook.com/mydrkevin, you will actually see the link to his Kickstarter campaign, and you can just click on it and you can go check it out, and you can be the coolest kid in your neighborhood by pre-ordering a pair of patos. Right? Right,
that's
Fernando?
Correct. That's like
correct. That's intelligent. Not that I would know because I don't have a pair, but, you know. So now moving back to our show, we are now behind the curtain. So one of the things I try to do is I want to expose listeners to something that is a misnomer, something that's incorrect in the that we hear in social media or we hear on TV, or we're taught that's an incorrect belief system. You are a junior at UPenn. You have won some recognition and awards. You're having a very successful Kickstarter campaign. You have started your own company. It's an international company. Those are some pretty impressive things. What have you learned wasn't true in your journey so far that you'd like to correct in my listeners' consciousness?
Well, I guess on the topic of, I guess, what you just said about me, you know, something that comes to mind, I guess, is just don't believe the hype in a way. You know, it's very easy, especially nowadays, to, as a person, almost market yourself. I mean, at Penn, I spend a lot of time just seeing everyone who's having to apply for jobs and kind of structure who they are on the outside in a way that's very appealing to others. I mean, you know, I could list off accolades and things like that that I've, you know, been able to work for. And it's not to discount them at all or discredit them, like, you know, the Inc. Magazine thing. But what I will say is that there are a lot of situations where people are able to, you know, pick certain things that sort of inflate who they are and try to, you know, create a whole hype persona about them before really creating anything. And so my only interjection there is, you know, when you're learning about people and you're seeing what people have done, don't believe all the hype because you only really hear about the good things.
Okay. So there's a lot of people up there that are doing a lot of hype and don't really have what it takes to back it up, is what I'm hearing you say. Do you think that for a young entrepreneur that sometimes they're guided or almost pushed into the hype as an offset of people are going to use your age against you? Is that a fair statement?
Completely. And look, there are certain things that, you know, when you are 20 years old and you're trying to walk into a room of people that are like maybe twice your age and want them to take you seriously and to talk about business, there are a lot of predispositions that keep you from doing that correctly. And you know, it makes sense that people have, you know, kids our age have to go through a lot of effort to sort of make themselves be taken seriously. But what I will say is that there is a distinction between, you know, just being impressive as a person and doing things that garner or that, you know, are able to gain attention and gaining attention on its own. And so that's sort of the difference that that I often see.
Okay. What do you think was your worst? And I don't want any names. I don't want who they were attached to or anything. This isn't about putting any one person down or anything. But what do you think so far has been the worst piece of advice you have gotten as a 20-year-old? Or you started this, you had to have been 19 or 18 when you first started envisioning this company and doing stuff. What was the worst piece of advice that you got that if you had ignored sooner, you would have been further ahead?
Well, I mean, I think for starters, I think by nature, you only really remember the good advice until you continue following and you're happy about. But if I were to try to think about the more negative things, you know, I think that, and this is just from my personal experience, of course, it varies from everyone when they're starting a business, but for me, it was not a very good use of time to do so much business planning. You know, creating a long-term and short-term plan and really making ideation for what my business would be and then pitching it to people. I found that I did that for a while. I got a lot of rejection, and then I had nothing really to fall back on. after I that you know I kept pitching people my business idea, I kept getting rejected, I decided to just sort of try and start selling and just getting out there. And as a result, I was able to actually test the real market a little bit, and that was a much better way to build a business plan because it wasn't totally based on conjecture. So I think, you know, a piece of conventional wisdom or advice that I received a lot to sort of, you know, do things that way. Like you get an idea, you build an MVP, you get a business plan, you just keep doing that. You know, maybe that works for a lot of people, but for me, it really just slowed me down in the long term. Sorry, I think you're cutting out a little bit.
Oh, if you've changed, you say was that maybe a little less planning for a little length of time, for a prolonged length of time, and more action earlier on would have made you farther ahead than you are now?
Yeah, it would have made me farther ahead, and I would have just learned more.
I'm cutting out. Okay. If you were to talk to a 19-year-old who wanted to kind of do what you're doing right now, planning, do you think that they should do? Like, what would be the, like, right amount in hindsight?
I would think never plan more than a month ahead when you're super early on. I think it's good to kind of keep in mind your long-term vision, of course. You know, I knew that I wanted to create a shoe company that took styles from Latin America and brought them here. That was my big vision, and I'm, you know, still changing it. But the important thing to keep in mind is, like, your idea and what you really want will have to adapt a lot as you work. So when you're just writing down the concept all the time, you don't really understand the things you have to change. So I would say, yeah, maybe keep in mind a plan for the months ahead. Set goals and milestones for what you have to do within that month, you know, to get where you want to go. But if you just are only, you know, like, if you haven't started anything, you're just making projections, like, it's all just going to change.
Yeah. I mean, it's my philosophy, and, you know, my first degrees were in business, and I still do business consulting. And, you know, I do it from a more spiritual perspective, but I have all my degrees and I've taught in business classes and, you know, have worked with businesses of all sizes. And it's like one good day with the right two or three key people and the right person to run it. One good day of 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, 12 months, a year, or maybe 2 years down the road, kind of what we'd like to do, give it one day, give it intensity, spend 10, 12 hours, really put it in, kick around as much as you want, come out with a list of questions of things you need to investigate that you never thought of or stuff like that. And then, you know, touch it once every couple of months for 2 or 3 hours with key advisors to say, well, what's shifted and what's changed? And to me, that's about as much as you need to do. Do you think that that would have been too much, or was that what you did, or was that a lot less than you did initially?
I think it's just it's structured a little differently. I mean, I think that all sounds great. The way I did things was much more closed in for a long time. Like, I didn't engage that many other people for a while. Which I think was just the wrong thing to do. So I learned from that. Like, I now have tons of people at all times giving me eyes and on my business and whatever I'm doing. And, like, I'm always testing different messaging and products and things like that when I'm planning a launch or whatever it might be. I think it's very important to engage a lot of other people and, you know, just constantly be doing stuff. Like, you have to really hold yourself accountable and know that, like, if you don't get something done at a certain point, that will actually advance what you're up to. You know, like, cut out all the fat of, like, what, like, making plans and things like that. That if it's necessary, then definitely do it. But if you find you're just doing it to make you feel like you're being productive, then it's likely a waste of time.
Well, and you know, a lot of times it's easier to do things to make you feel like you be productive than doing the hard stuff, which is productive. Because no matter who you are, there are certain things within business, within any business, as an entrepreneur, there are going to be parts of it you hate. There are going to be parts of it that are not your bailiwick. I love the, if it's not your genius, it's not your job. And you want to have, I actually teach a class called Synergizing Your Team and how to actually get your team to put in 125%, but do it so joyfully that they feel like they're barely working. And it takes a combination of different skill sets and different tools and different perspectives and different things to fully get an idea of how to get that ball launched out of that cannon, make it go. People say entrepreneurship is lonely, but I think that oftentimes unsuccessful entrepreneurs are lonely. Successful entrepreneurs have key team people and people that can advise them and work with them and help them.
Yeah, and I think that the most successful people are just surrounded by other great people. It's definitely true.
Absolutely. And everybody brings something different to to the table, and you want to hear it all. And then you reach a point where you go, okay, but at the end of the day, it's my business. It's my business. It's my stuff that's on the line. It's my blood, sweat, tears. It's my idea. It's my thing. So we're going to be right back for our last segment. We are with Fernando Rojo.
Your soul with Waves of Consciousness on Om Times Radio. Host your show on IOM FM, the radio network of Om Times Media, one of the more recognized brand names in the conscious community, and is backed by the extensive marketing reach of Om Times. Hosting a show on IOM FM immediately connects you with our extensive dedicated community.
Eros Evolution is where sexuality and spirituality meets. Join me, clinical sexologist Martha Tara Lee, on Eros Evolution on Thursdays, 4 p.m. Eastern on Om Times Radio.
Hi, this is Carly Simon for Lifebeat, the music industry fights AIDS. The AIDS crisis isn't over. There have been amazing scientific breakthroughs, but people are still dying, and your local AIDS organization needs your help more now than ever. Volunteer and make a difference.
Hello. You're breaking up. Oh, okay. I couldn't hear. I lost you completely. Hello, and welcome back to the last segment of the Dr. Kevin Show, where we're challenging everything and everyone. Fernando, you still there?
I'm right here.
Ah, good. Yeah, the commercials were breaking up, and then they kind of were still going and went silent and went going and went silent, and I don't know. One of these days, we're going to make this run so smooth that we're going to forget we ever had problems. And that day can't come too soon. So, Fernando, we are into our last segment here at the Dr. Kevin Show. What the segment I call What a Load of Crap. And this is where you can share whatever load of crap you think is going on in the world, whether it's about shoes or entrepreneurialism or 20-somethings, whatever you think is something that you would like to put out to the world and say, that's just a load of crap, no matter what they tell you. What would you like to educate my listeners on?
That's a good question. Let's see. Well, I guess one thing that comes to mind is something that's thrown around by, you know, kind of the highest people in our time right now, which is that our political system is rigged. It's definitely a pretty interesting notion, but when you really look closely at what's happening in the United States, you realize it's not really true. Incredibly low numbers of people actually go out and vote, which is realistically a big result of what you actually get in Congress, in the Senate, people that are so opposed, and a system that doesn't change that much who's in office. But the fact is there is a plateau to how much money someone raises compared to their support. If everyone actually voted in the United States, then, you know, our political system would be much more representative of the people. But, you know, you have incredibly low turnout rates, and because of, you know, the low turnout rates and the fact that people only vote for their party down the entire ticket rather than actually knowing the candidates that they vote for, you know, that ends up causing a lot more of the split than some sort of system being rigged.
What do you think we can do to get more people to vote? I mean, it is really sad, and we don't have a representation of the people. And somewhere in the 80 to 90% of people get voted back in, the same old, and yet you have in the 90% of people that say that they're unhappy with the current state of this country, what's being done by the government, and yet they never change who they send. So how do we, I mean, can we mass produce, like, don't be stupid pills and make everyone take them? What do you think?
Well, you know, there are a number of things. I think that, for starters, just the general complications of being able to vote in the United States are pretty relevant. You know, the having to register, having to, you know, for a lot of people, go really far to polling places that aren't close by, to have to get IDs they can't access, to have to sacrifice a work day. You know, I think it by nature disenfranchises a lot of people who, you know, can't miss work on that day or don't have the ability to drive 3 hours to go to a DMV and get an ID. So, you know, if we want to make things better, I think realistically we would make voting easier. You know, voter registration would be automatic. Voting might even just be mandatory. You know, I think there are a lot of steps that the country can take. But for those who are able to vote and just choose not to, I mean, I think that kind of takes away any right to complain about the political system.
Well, I have said almost my whole life, if you didn't vote, you don't get to bitch. Simple. If you didn't go out there and at least make an attempt to make a difference or make a change, then don't talk to me. You lost your right to talk to me about it. You know, I would love to figure out how to make voting mandatory. I don't know that we can, but I've kicked around the concept with other guests. I've kicked around the concept in when I've done, you know, talks and spoken around the country of how do we get more people, you know, we could do things like you can't get your social service benefits if you don't vote. I mean, what the person who is completely off the grid or the person that doesn't need anything, average Joe America, how do we make them mandatorily vote? Do they, you know, do we take away their driver's license or do we, I don't know. I mean, we would almost have to become a democracy. We'd almost have to become a dictatorship first.
And, you know, I totally understand that sentiment. What I will say, you know, consider, for example, jury duty. Now, jury duty is something that is considered a staple of the justice system, right? It's something that is inherent to fairness. And jury duty, while there are situations where people can get out of it, it is mandatory. It is something that when you're called upon, you have to do. Now, what I would propose for voter registration, for mandatory voting, for example, is meaning you have the option to opt out. Completely easy. You click a button and you opt out and you don't have to vote. Because as long as you're actively saying you don't feel like participating, I think that that's okay for the same reason. Now, in terms of what the punishment would be, realistically, I think that just moving it to a weekend and making it a law, even though it's a very, very low punishment, I don't know if that's even the right word, but like enforcement, would increase the rate. I think that in general, people want to follow the law and like want a reason to have to do it. I think it just gets by a lot of people and that there are certain things getting in the way.
Now, if we made changes in the system where people felt more empowered, like get rid of the Electoral College, I mean, you know, I hear people that live in a, let's say, a red state, that they know that their vote, you know, when they vote for president, that, you know, they're clearly in the minority in their state. So because the whole state goes for the Republican or vice versa, either one, they go, well, why should I bother to vote? Why should I bother to vote? Because my vote doesn't mean anything because my state is 80% red and 20% blue, and we can't overcome those odds. So are there changes in the system itself that have made the system broken enough that it's made people apathetic? It's made them disenfranchised?
Well, yeah, of course, it definitely has. I mean, there are different states that have, you know, taken different approaches, like splitting up the votes in a couple of northeastern states, you know, from each state, where they still sort of respect the Electoral College, but have it a little more divided up. You know, I think there are a lot of people who say it's just an antiquated way of doing politics, of doing voting, and it very well might be. Now, getting past that, I don't see that ever changing in the United States, to be honest. It definitely would add more broad stroke representation to not have an Electoral College, but I just don't think it's realistic.
So that's very interesting, because there are a lot of people that are pushing to get rid of the Electoral College. There are a lot of people that say that it does not do a fair representation, that you can win the popular vote and lose the election. So why do you think the Electoral College is so ingrained that we won't get rid of it?
Well, it's sort of for the purpose that it was created in the first place. I mean, the Electoral College is around for, you know, kind of maintaining order. Not letting any, you know, there was a lot of worry, you know, when we gained independence that, you know, we would lose that. And so by having the Electoral College, nothing too, quote unquote, like crazy can really arise, right? No very extreme views outside of what we consider to be acceptable can sort of take over. That's why you see, you know, an independent candidate, no matter how much support they might have, the Electoral College kind of keeps them back. And I think that, you know, for whatever reason, it's just sort of a staple of the way things are done in the United States. I think it's kind of connected to the inception of our democracy. And for that reason, I don't know if it's a serious thing to consider changing.
Well, we're going to be wrapping down in a couple minutes, and I want to make sure I do one more review of kind of the what you've done and where you're going. So I'm going to bring this to a close. The minute that we decide that something is beyond a real examination about whether it functions or not, once we decide that something is untouchable, we absolutely have to touch it. That is the sign that says, big old sign that always says to me, then we must look at it. As soon as we're told that we shouldn't or we can't or it's beyond, then it means we absolutely need to. That's the only way we're going to evolve and grow and continue to be a great country. Because the 21st century is not the 1700s. So I don't think we should have any golden gooses. On that note, go ahead.
Yeah, no, it's not for sure.
On that note, I'm talking today with Fernando Rojo. He's a 20-year-old student at UPenn in Philadelphia. During his freshman year, he founded Pato Shoes, a social impact shoe brand that sells handcrafted sneakers made with authentic indigenous textiles from Latin America. Without receiving any venture capital funding, Patos was featured in CNBC, named as one of 2016's coolest college startups by Inc. magazine, and has sold shoes in stores and online across the U.S. They are currently doing a Kickstarter campaign, and you can come to facebook.com/mydrkevin, M-Y-D-R-K-E-V-I-N. Make sure you like me while you're there. I'm likable. And you will see the link that will take you right to the Kickstarter campaign. They've already are 25% into the campaign, but have reached almost 50% of their goal. They're doing fabulous, and they're offering to pre-buy shoes to give to help people, artisans and manufacturers in Peru and people in the U.S. To grow and establish this country, establish themselves and grow the country. Fernando, thank you for coming on.
Thanks so much for having me.
Have a great day.
You too.